Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
Visualization is huge because you really have to be able to see it for yourself, to believe it, and to start taking action. So it's really in the questioning, not accepting that first answer, especially when it comes to, for example, like why they might want to achieve something. It's not the first answer, but then, well, why is that important? And why is that? So it's with the visualization piece of achieving and seeing your goals, it's getting really clear about what it looks like, how you would feel, you know, kind of touching like all the senses so that you really experience it. By doing that, I think that makes it easier to achieve it, and you start to really see yourself and start believing in the possibilities.
This is Brett. Welcome back to the School Sucks podcast. Today is Monday, January 4th. My guest is a friend of mine and a health coach. Her name is Jackie Dulcimer. In recent years, we've had a bunch of like fun and exciting conversations about diet and fitness. And we have always done this with the expectation that at some point she would come on the show as a guest and share some of her wisdom with you. Well, the time is now. We're going to discuss new habit installation and goal setting, mostly in a health and fitness kind of context, but a lot of this is applicable beyond as well. If you want to learn more about Jackie, what she does, how to work with her, you can just find her on Facebook. For the best results, spell her name the exact same way that I did in the title of the show. But for obvious reasons, this is a good show, good topic to lead off the year with. But it also fits what is going to be a larger theme for the School Sucks podcast in 2021. Kind of goes back to that advice that I got from Cousin Nick in our Black Pill show when he said the primary project for right now is the preservation of your own sanity. Well, there's lots of different ways to approach that project. And certainly better self-management is an essential part of that. And that will be our discussion today. This is a standalone show. There are going to be fewer of those this year. Most of our content will be serial with an S, even though it is also a goal by the end of 21 to have our own serial. It'll have like pumpkin seeds and little dark chocolate pieces in it, but also maybe some marshmallows with messages for the kids like don't take career advice from your guidance counselor. It's product development at this point. We're still looking at what the messaging capabilities are for marshmallows floating in cereal. So stay tuned for more on that. Yeah, there's going to be more series this year. Deeper dives with, I would say, a through line of self-defense. And that doesn't just mean physical self-defense. There's a variety of forms, you know, emotional, financial, professional. We're going to talk about it all. So I'm really looking forward to getting started on a new year of content. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this. Thanks to Jackie for coming on the show and sharing her knowledge. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know this is one of my favorite topics of discussion. I'm very passionate about this. In fact, when we're done with public school, our next target is Planet Fitness, which, by the way, I can't prove this, so I will add allegedly. Allegedly, Planet Fitness is a conspiracy to deprive the entire planet of fitness by luring people who think they're interested in fitness in with a very, very low monthly membership rate and then feeding them Tootsie Rolls. Planet Fitness has got to go. We're building an army. Scott Hambrick from the Barbell Logic podcast is on board, and we'll get to work on that when the time is right. So I love being able to have personal development conversations focused on health and fitness, and I hope you enjoy them as well. Remember, we survive and thrive with your support. You can do that by going to patreon.com/schoolsucks or seeing all of the support options at schoolsucksproject.com/AV, but Patreon is the fastest way to get access to all of our additional content. Nathan Frazier and I will be resuming our Emotional Manipulators for Hire series this week as well, so stay tuned for that. All right, everybody, that's it. Thanks again for your time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for any feedback you might provide. And I hope your day and week and month and year is off to a great start. And I'll talk to you again soon.
I woke to the world one morning. I did not really know what was going on.
didn't care about tomorrow. I worry when tomorrow comes. I went outside that night, set the old imagination aflight. Set the imagination aflight. For 1 second I felt like a kid on Christmas Day. I'm sorry, said in a word, I will explain if I may.
Okay, I'm very pleased to welcome to the show for the first time, Jackie Dulcimer, a health coach. Hi, Jackie.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, this is long overdue. It's something we've talked about doing for a while, and here we are. The timing, I think, is perfect for the topic we're going to be discussing, right?
Yes.
First thing I want to do, because you're going to be sharing this with your people. I know you have a lot of activity on Facebook. You do lives. You have a big network of people that you've worked with and you've helped. And this is a show called School Sucks. And I'm not going to apologize for the name of the show, but I wanted to explain that a little bit. I was a teacher, and then I was like a private academic service provider for a long time. I found that system came up short in a lot of ways as far as providing genuine education. Maybe you, the listener, the new listener, the first time listener, have had a similar experience either for yourself or with your kids. So in 2009, I started this project as kind of like a blog, a way to vent a lot of the frustration that I was seeing in my job at the time. It became a thing, and here we are 12 years later. So despite the name of the show, most of our content is not about school. I find school to be kind of a boring topic. We spend a lot of time talking about what education should be, and I know you are a teacher, and I thought maybe I'd just let you weigh in on the school issue before we get started here with something that is actually educational. Like, we're going to talk about goal setting. And I think habit's going to be a part of that. You know, that's good stuff. But you were a teacher, and I know you have two kids in school, and I just wanted to let you air your grievances, because we talked earlier this year when school went virtual and you didn't seem like you were a big fan. But anything you need to get out about school, this is a safe place to do that. So go ahead.
Well, I definitely agree with you with the school systems coming up short and not really providing that genuine education. And I feel like there's a lot more with the curriculum and the drives for testing and whatnot. It's more just feeding information and reciting it back. The virtual schooling, when it first started, was definitely a huge challenge, and it has improved this year. So it's getting significantly better, but I still see the same problems with what it is that they're covering, the topics, and just how they're presenting it. They talk about wanting to create these lifelong learners, but I don't really see a lot of evidence of that in the schools, or at least I didn't when I was there. It was just a nice thing to say.
Yeah, there's definitely kind of a shortcut industry that caters to that need of like, just give me the answer. Just tell me how to feel about this thing. Just fix this problem for me. What's the minimal amount of work that I could do? I watched this great TED Talk last night. This guy, Matthew Crawford, I want to say his name was. And it was all about like doing things with your hands. And now like we go and we buy stuff and we can't even open it. We can't even understand. Like if you needed to fix a washing machine, the layers of like unnecessary electronics that you would have to just peel off it to even be able to get to the motor, it's almost an impossible project. So much of like even our consumer behavior is set up now around not being able to do things for ourselves. And that actually brings me, I wanted you to explain like the function of your job as a health coach. I like that term because I think it's very broad. It's very integrative and inclusive. And it's more than just, you've been a personal trainer, but health coaching is more than just personal training. So for my audience, can you define what that means?
Sure. So as a health coach, basically, I inspire, educate, and empower people to live a healthy lifestyle. And to do that, I focus on six macro habits: weight management, nutrition and hydration, sleep, motion, healthy surroundings, and healthy mind. And through those six habits, by working on each one of those individually and improving within each one of those, people are living healthier lifestyles, less stress, better emotional management, more energy. So, I mean, this just kind of really changes not just their lifestyle, but also how they're showing up in the world.
Yeah. So people get a kind of balance. And this is another interesting thing, because I bet your job has changed a lot. I know your job has changed a lot in 2020 with, you know, gym shutting down. And if that had been in the past, like the central meeting place, the only way that you interacted with people, you know, that becomes the thing. Like, we're here to move, we're here to do this one aspect of the six, but kind of like letting people go and having to be more autonomous with all of this. Have you had good results with that? Like, now being outside of the gym and being able to get more of this balance and people like taking ownership in the process? Or have you had generally bad results with that, where people like need the accountability to come and be face to face with you?
Well, I think, you know, with the pandemic, people are way more open now to getting on at some sort of Zoom or FaceTime. So that type of meeting is, you know, a lot more socially accepted now than before, when you had to come into like a brick and mortar like gym. So people are definitely more open to it and see that as an alternative to going to the gym. So it's definitely allowed me to expand my business with more clients. And I also work with other coaches too. So it just has really grown. But as far as getting people to be autonomous, that is sort of a, you know, they are coming initially because they just want me to kind of tell them what to do, what to do, what to do. But yeah, my goal is to help them learn how to find answers themselves. So I provide tools, I direct them to resources so that they have to invest in it themselves and take actions. And so it's sort of a gradual process, but by the end of working with me, people are using their own resources and able to answer their own questions. So it's great to see it happen.
Right. Absolutely. So that actually brings up another thing too. You're probably about to have a spectacular boom in business as the new year approach. People might hear this like right as the years change, but this, I'm guessing, is a busy time of year for you. And what's that like in the health coaching or personal training industry, where a bunch of people come in, because you've done this long enough to certainly identify patterns, and then kind of like, I'm guessing, check out not too long after that for one reason,
right,
or another?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it always amazes me every year at the beginning of the year, people are all excited about working on their health and focusing on, you know, losing weight, eating healthier, exercising. And it never fails. I always would say, you know, when I worked in a gym, you'd see this influx of people. And then as soon as we'd have our first snowstorm, 75% would stop. And then they'd come back again in March when it was like the first day of spring. And then they're like, oh yeah, I want to work on this.
Right.
So the goal is always to really try to capture these people and get them into a strong momentum so that they continue,
yeah,
to work on their goals.
Man, the gym is really something. Like in January. All right. So we in Pittsburgh in January 2019, we were going to this stuffy gym downtown in the city that was already not big enough. And the place just became so insane. The next year we were going to LA Fitness. So it was a nightmare. It was, but you're right, by like, and I know I'm not saying anything that people don't already know, by February, the crowd is thinned out to about half. And then usually by the end of February, it's even less. So I bet, you know, as people kind of step away from working with you, it's probably like a variety of excuses. But if you had to kind of like generalize and establish a consistent problem or obstacle that people encounter, what would be the thing that drives people away most regularly?
You know, I think really it's just they often will say that they don't have time or that, you know, they don't have the resources, they're not around the food that they need, or, you know, it was too expensive. But really, I think, you know, they just hit obstacles, they lose motivation, and they give up.
So a lot of it is probably like self-limiting beliefs, self-image stuff. And we've talked about this before, but there's a kind of determinism in the way that we talk about ourselves. And I still catch myself doing this. Like, I listen back to conversations that I'm having with people, and I'll define myself as like, I'm this or I'm that. I'm using this fixed mindset versus having a growth mindset. And there might be things about our personalities or about our self-image or our self-limiting beliefs that we actually can't get there as far as like goals or new habits are concerned without some level of reinvention, which is a part of what you do. If you talk about this as one of these six pillars that you mentioned, addressing the mindset stuff, right? That's got to be an extremely important place to start with somebody that is, I don't know, resistant or skeptical. Like, that has to be the place where motivation needs to be focused, right?
Right. I mean, you know, definitely the stories that people tell themselves are based on the experiences that they've had, or, you know, things that may have been ingrained as a child. And they really are like these limiting beliefs, because they're based on what we have done and that this is what we can do. So it's kind of that fixed mindset that, you know, I've achieved what I can. And to make goals in the future, you have to be okay and have that growth mindset that you can continue to move forward. But because people have all of these beliefs, like, I can't do this, or I'm, you know, I'm too old, or I'm not smart enough, or, you know, the stories that people tell themselves, that limits then the action that they're going to take.
That being said, as far as like a habit installation process is concerned, where do you start with that? How does that whole progression play out if you're really needing to, I mean, a habit is a building block of a goal. So is it goals and then reverse engineering through habits, or is it trying to change habits before in a way to like maybe build some confidence towards actually setting a goal? Because I find like with a lot of my own goal setting, like we've talked about this on the show a bunch. I will actually, for your people, I will link in the show notes to a bunch of related content that we've done. But sometimes goals seem too big, or they seem too far out there. And then there is that psychology of self, that self-image thing where you go, yeah, but I couldn't do that. There's no way I could do that, because we're operating from, you know, past experience or some self-limiting belief. So in that process of new habit installation, is it starting with the goal and then working back to habits, or starting with habits and working towards a goal?
I really am more, you know, about getting people to think big with their goals and, you know, taking them from that fixed mindset, you know, and I'll ask people what their goals are, and they'll tell them to me, and I can tell that they're based on what they've already experienced. And so then I kind of give them this question as to, well, what if failure wasn't an option? What would you like to achieve? And I try to just kind of prod and get them to think bigger, more in the realm of possibility, not just based on what they've experienced so far. So we create that goal together and get that big vision. And that is, you know, so we get crystal clear on what that looks like. And then we've got to get crystal clear on where they currently are, so that then we can identify what the habits are between the two, then start working on them. And so we start, you know, it's kind of like think big, but act small. So we're taking little steps towards that goal. And those are the habits that we're building.
Right. That actually brings up the topic of visualization. And I wanted to hear your thoughts about this as well, because visualization can work in all of these respects, right? It can work towards like putting yourself, like doing a kind of mental rehearsal of better ways to think and act, which would be habit. A mental experiencing of the thing you want, a kind of like auto suggestion, like Napoleon Hill always used to talk about, like think and grow rich, that kind of idea. So it works there. But even if it just comes to fitness and like the physical act of working out, I've seen studies that say people who go through the motions in their mind, they rehearse the exercises they're going to do. And I've been like so into certain workouts that I've done that like I'm waiting to go to the gym. I'm waiting to get there. And I say, I'm going to get there and I'm going to do this first. And it's going to be just like this. And this is the weight I'm going to do. And it's going to be this increase over the last time I tried to do this. The energy, like you can actually feel a physical change from doing those kinds of visualizations. So before we actually talk about like installing a new habit, is visualization a part of the exercises that you're encouraging people to do? And if so, how do you do that?
Yeah, I definitely think visualization is huge because you really have to be able to see it for yourself to be able to believe it and to start taking action. So it's really in that, in the questioning of, you know, what their goals are and just really kind of not accepting that first answer, you know, especially when it comes to, for example, like why they might want to achieve something. It's, you know, not the first answer, but then, well, why is that important? And why is that? So it's with the visualization piece of achieving and seeing your goals, it's getting really clear about what it looks like, how you would feel, you know, kind of touching like all the senses so that you really experience it. By doing that, I think that makes it easier to achieve it. And you start to really see yourself and start believing in the possibilities.
And how do you encourage that like along the way? Like not to get all behaviorist, but there has to be like some positive reinforcement for that, like to see people doing that or to correct people when they fall away from that and back into negative self-talk. When you see people doing positive visualization, how do you encourage it versus like if they slip back into negative self-talk, how do you try to correct them?
Yeah. So basically I do a lot with journaling and having people write things out so that they can, you know, it's not just in their head that they have these ideas and beliefs, but really writing it out in detail and creating sort of like a cheat sheet to that and, you know, having that with you. So it might be a note card or, you know, and you could hang it in the mirror in the bathroom or have it with you at all times. So just having something there so that when they do catch themselves, and that's a part of like becoming mindful of our thoughts, catching yourself and realizing and thinking about what is the actual evidence behind this. And could there be an alternative possibility? And what, you know, if I were to change this negative self-talk around, what would that look like? And have them changing that. So between the two, the visualizing, writing it out, having a cheat sheet, that's definitely one that I use often.
So it sounds like there's a lot of like cognitive behavioral therapy in this. Like there's, you know, an activating event that creates a problem, and then in comes a pre-existing belief that a person has. And so there's a consequence of that belief, same behavior, same results kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And this is about installing some kind of new belief just through like an interruption or a repetition of a better idea to get a different result.
Correct.
All right. So what else? And as far as like journaling, first of all, I just want to vent about fitness logs. I do not understand how people do not keep these. And every time I see a man who is just doing like weight training at a gym, walking around without a book, this just baffles me. I don't get it. Are they committing all this to memory? Do they know what they did the last time they did the same thing? I'm very perplexed by this. Fortunately, I haven't been in a gym in 9 months, but I would always be bothered by people not having little logbooks. So I don't know if that is a part of the journaling, but how do you feel about that? Because it's obviously something I'm very passionate about. And then is journaling a daily practice or is it like kind of an as needed thing? And does it have a kind of framework to it that you encourage people to at least try out in the beginning?
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely, I think when you are working towards a specific goal in the gym, whether it's to increase strength, speed, endurance, then you definitely want to track it somehow so that you can see the progress, but also so that when you, you know, go into the gym that next time, you can look and see, well, last time I did this. So, you know, it's that slight improvement today that you should see. So, tracking is huge, and that's kind of different than the actual journaling. The clients that I work with, we have a life book. It's a self-authoring book that I use that has them go through all the macro habits that I talked about and just give some information, sort of like the history behind where we were, you know, what it was like 10,000 years ago and how we got food and what it's like now. And then just has people, you know, give some writing prompts as to what to focus on. So, and that's just something that they spend like 3 to 5 minutes a day doing. So I, you know, part of what I get them into is like a morning routine. And so that is a big component of it, is the 3 to 5 minutes of journaling.
Right. What else is key in this habit installation process?
I find that it's key to really start small and think about what is it that you can do every single day. What is, you know, if you're trying to increase your push-ups, let's say, I'm asking you, what is the least number that you could do or the most you could do every single day, whether you are motivated or not motivated. So if it's only one push-up, then that's it. You know, you can do that every single day. So it's finding what you can do consistently every single day, because that's where that habit installation takes place, is by the repetition of it. So you can always do more than what you said, but you at least do that so that it keeps people having that repetitiveness, so it actually becomes a habit. So it's really helping people identify that and get honest with themselves about what they will really be doing.
And I would guess the nutrition piece is huge. And you said you came around on that more recently, like recognizing what a big part, like if there were three like principles to health, we could say, like if we could only have three, right? It would be physical activity, diet, and sleep. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would have to
that's
think.
That's tricky though, because mind is pretty big too.
No, I totally agree. I think that's, and I'm for a all hands on deck approach, like cognitive behavioral therapy, like evolutionary biology, understanding that, all of the mindset and the mindsight. Mindsight is the idea of being able to, we've been talking about this on my show a lot lately, and the resource for this that I would recommend people check out is a guy named Dan Siegel. And he has this wonderful, like he calls it the wheel of awareness. And it's this meditation exercise that you can do. It takes a while. I mean, it's like a 25-30 minute time investment, but you go through like letting different aspects fill your consciousness, like different aspects inside you and beyond you. So the first exercise is like you go through all of your senses and you just let sense of smell, sense of sight, all five, fill awareness, and you experience that. And then you go inside your body and do that kind of body scan meditation. Then you go inside your mind and just like really pay attention to your thoughts, which is a departure from what meditation exercises usually are, where a thought comes and you guide it away and you just kind of focus on your breath. I think that's pretty typical. Right. But then in the fourth like quadrant of this exercise, you're actually trying to do, I don't know, this mapping or analysis of like how your thoughts come and go. Like a thought comes in, what prompts it? Is there a space between that thought and the next thought? Does the previous thought lead to the following thought? It's a really, really interesting exercise. So when I say mind sight, it's actually about raising awareness of what is happening in our minds and just like prioritizing presence and awareness as a really useful exercise. And fitness is so great for this. Like when I was wrapping up my gym days earlier this year, one, I had a partner, and that was good because it made me take the earbuds out, right? So obviously, I used to always go and work out and listen to podcasts or audiobooks or music or whatever. And I felt like it was creating this kind of detachment in like a mind-body connection, because my mind was preoccupied and my body was just kind of going through the motions of doing the thing that it said to do in my logbook, of course, because I had one and I was looking at it. I'm not a madman, so I have my logbook. And when I took the headphones out, even if I was there with another person, I found that that was connecting me better to the activity, and it was actually helping me make progress faster by being, you know, more in touch with the movement and how it felt and, you know, the form I was using. So that awareness is great in the bigger picture and in all of the other pillars beyond the physical activity. But I think it's really important in the physical activity as well. And then the mindset, I'm really on a roll here. The mindset would be all of these things that we're kind of taking into it that we would try to address through journaling or cognitive behavioral therapy. So all that being said, let's go back to the beginning as far as like building a progression that makes this system, these six pillars that you laid out, work together or work for people long-term through this gradual approach that you mentioned. If a person now or whenever is trying to form these new habits that are going to lead to a healthier life, what are the most simple building blocks in the beginning?
Yeah, you know, they all go hand in hand, but for to get the most bang for your buck, I think if you focus with improving your nutrition and hydration, those two things are key. Both of those are going to lead to increased energy because your body's getting the right nutrients it needs to perform. Same with the hydration. So starting there is important because if people aren't getting proper nutrition and hydration, then usually they have fatigue, irritability. And so that makes it hard to really do any of the other things. So improving the nutrition and hydration gives that extra energy. It actually even helps with sleep. And that also helps with extra energy. So then, you know, I get these people that when they first come to me, they're too tired, irritable, kind of in a fog, and they don't want to work out, to where now you fix the nutrition and hydration, they start sleeping better. Now they're like, oh, okay, now I have more energy. Now I do want to move more. I do want to work out. So I think the nutrition and hydration is the key to getting started.
Do you ever talk to people? I'm just curious because obviously this is becoming like a bigger and bigger thing. Do you ever talk to people about like their digital habits or their information consumption or the time they spend staring at screens and
yes,
the impact of that?
Yes, that's important in both the surroundings and the sleep. So with the surroundings, it's, you know, what you're watching on your phone or TV, whatever, digitally. That's what you're feeding your mind, the information, the things you listen to, the people you talk to. So all of that is impacting your surroundings. And especially when it comes to the screen time in the evenings, that sleep is important. And so we actually recommend that you kind of have like a digital sunset at least an hour before you're actually going to be going to bed. So we talk about that because of the lighting on the screens can interrupt the sleep.
But we have to actually talk about the fitness component of this too. So you're a health coach, you're a personal trainer. People seek you out voluntarily. I find that I wind up being more of like fitness police or fitness TSA, where I kind of just show up whether people want me there or not and offer unsolicited things. There have been people though, there have been people who ask me for my advice about like working out or figuring out, you know, how to start or what is manageable. And obviously, like when you talk about these basics to get a running start, it's just as important with the fitness piece as well, right? Like doing what I really think doing something that you like to do, I almost feel like the habit is more important than the goal. For me at this point, like, yes, I'd like to get stronger. I'd like to be more flexible. I'd like to be as strong as I possibly can be at my size and bone structure, being a healthy weight and in a natural way, of course, when I reach the age where I can't get stronger anymore, like that's a goal. But the act of doing this stuff is really where I get a lot of pleasure and satisfaction and like that mind-body connection. So I've realized giving people some clarity on where to start is really important in the advice that I've given to friends or if people in the audience have ever asked me about what I do and why. But also like really finding something that doesn't feel like a chore, that is work and is difficult, but that people can find enjoyment in, right? Like that's got to be so important in getting people started with this.
Right. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, as far as movement goes, basically there's cardiovascular fitness, there's muscular, you know, endurance and strength, and there's flexibility. And a lot of people think like, oh, if I'm going to exercise, then I've got to run and lift weights. And that's not the case at all. Anything that is going to increase your heart rate for an extended period of time is good for the cardiovascular. And so really that could be anything. That could be dancing. It could be walking. It could be running. It could be CrossFit. It could be anything, soccer, an organized sport. So it really can be anything. And then the second piece with the muscular endurance and strength, you've got to be engaging every muscle group in your body at least twice a week. And so that's what I kind of focus on, looking at where they currently are and trying to get them to understand, you know, you've got to engage those muscles. So if you are choosing a certain activity, just make sure it's not, you know, like if you're just running, there's not a lot of upper body strength involved in that. So you've got to figure out how to get that in as well. And then flexibility is really a daily thing that should be happening.
Mm, yeah. Like through stretching or yoga.
Right. Right. And it doesn't, and you know, and a lot of times like people think these need to be some organized thing, you know, especially like, oh, I have to go to a gym to do it, but you don't, you can do it from anywhere. And people are doing that more and more now.
Yeah. Did you have to go through a period of no gym?
Yeah. And in fact, I actually have only gone to the gym, I don't know, maybe 7-8 times since March of 2020, which is, you know, that was usually what I did in a week. So I found that, you know, different ways to work out from home and outside that I prefer now over actually going to the gym.
So what have been the biggest payoffs for you, or like the most satisfying things to do outside of a gym? And I'll give you some of mine too, but I would like to hear yours first.
Definitely walking and hiking have been two of the things that I've been doing a lot of lately. Just because we're so much more sedentary now than we were before the pandemic. I mean, if you know, there's days where I'll be in my house and it's 4 o'clock and I look at my phone and it says I've taken 400 steps. So, you know, getting outside and getting those walks in, just as, you know, 10,000 steps a day to get that movement in. I've also done a lot more of just calisthenics, jumping jacks, burpees, things like that, that I can do from my living room.
How do you feel about the exploding at-home fitness device industry? You must have run across. It's like every ad that I see on Instagram or Facebook is for some kind of, you know, rubber band or strap, or there's this Tonal Gym, TONAL. They're not a sponsor of the show. I would never buy this thing. It looks super expensive.
Right.
I'm very doubtful about some of the claims made about it. But I know there's also probably like a YouTube industry of like trying these things out and reviewing them. But how do you feel about all that generally? And have the circumstances forced you to try anything new and interesting?
Well, I definitely think a lot of them are really silly. So, I mean, they're just some kind of gimmick. I do like things like the Peloton, which is, you know, bringing a spin bike into someone's house with all the, you know, online classes and things that they can do. But really, I mean, all the like little gadgets and things I don't ever find to be as great as they say. Things that I do like are TRX straps, the ab wheel, which is like something you can get from Five and Below.
Yeah.
those are two things that I think are definitely worth it.
Okay. So this was really a selfish question because I want to ask you about the bands.
Okay. Right?
The rubber band. These are just like giant rubber bands.
Uh-huh.
And they come in different thicknesses for
right.
different resistance. And aside from like a pull-up bar, which is obviously really key, a couple of kettlebells that only weigh 35 pounds each. And I also have a set of like these cables, but it's hard to explain on here. But the resistance band has been like the big thing in 2020, just from what I've seen. And they were actually recommended to me by a friend. And the logic is that it's different than weights, where obviously you get a practical benefit where weights have to fight gravity.
Right.
So weights are only like vertical, but with the bands, as the resistance expands, or as the band expands, the resistance grows. So you can also work horizontally by like affixing it to a door. So it's convenient and it creates a lot more options that you don't have with whatever weights you might have or kettlebells you might have sitting around your house. And I like the idea that the more you're pushing it, the more you're extending it, the more the resistance is, where weights are a fixed resistance throughout the movement. But am I missing anything? Because I did get hurt once this summer trying to do squats with them. Like, you ever heard of Zercher squats? This crazy thing. Do you know what that is?
I feel like I have. Is that like in the front?
Yeah. Okay. So Zercher, I don't know who Zercher was or why he or she thought of this or why this caught on. But when I was looking for variety, I decided to give it a try. So a Zercher squat or a Zercher deadlift is when you reach down with your arms and grab the bar like in between your forearm and your bicep, and you curl it to hold it in that position.
Right.
So just if everybody's listening, just imagine like, you know, bend your arms in front of, so your hands are in front of your face and your biceps are tensed. You're holding the bar in that space in your arms. So I was trying to loop the band through my arms and do squats this way. And I aggravated my, I think I popped my SI joint and aggravated my sciatic nerve, which was a terrible injury in the previous year, but it wasn't that bad this time. It healed in like a month and now I don't feel anything at all. People do deadlifts this way too. So I'm recognizing that maybe that was a function of the bands, and you do get like kind of shaky sometimes when you're right. trying to push through a rep. And I'm experiencing things with them that I didn't experience with weights. So do you think the bands are again? I mean, I'm having good results. I'm staying in pretty good shape, but just I'd love to hear your thoughts on the bands, because I did see stuff like this at gym. So I know they were a thing.
Yeah, they're great. They can definitely get your muscles to, you know, activate. But, you know, because of the way the resistance band works, you do have more time under tension on the muscle. So in that way, it could theoretically be better. But I think, you know, with all of those types of things, it's like incorporating it in, not as like everything, this is the only thing I'm going to do, but just kind of mixing it in, because when it comes to strength training, it's like the different angles that you're performing reps at, the time under tension. These are things that you can vary to, you know, create that muscle confusion or whatnot. So I think that they're fine. It's just that you've got to be careful with them, because the form, you don't want to ever be compromising form just to get that next rep or to extend a little bit further.
Yeah. And you will feel like that is happening with this, because it's like, this is rubber. I can always push one more. Like, that's kind of the thinking. And as you push, you know, your whole body right. starts to shake. And I'm like, this is not good. This is probably a dangerous thing. But the results have been good, at least as far as like, I don't think I've gained a lot of strength since March, but it's definitely worked to maintain. Right. I'm actually going back to a gym. So that will be interesting. That will be an interesting experience. I'm curious to see how weak I actually am compared to where I left off.
It's interesting. You know, you'll probably be a little bit weaker than, you know, you, and especially if you haven't gone, I wouldn't recommend going back to what your last page on your log says and trying to do that. Right. I would, you know, go about 80%, because it is different and you will be hitting your body at different angles, but you will find within like a week or two, you'll be right back where you were.
Yeah, that's what I found. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. It's something that while I have compensated and while I have found replacements, this was such a wonderful and exciting part of my day up until whenever that was, March 11th, when I just decided that wasn't going to be the thing anymore.
Right.
So one more practical question that I actually had for you is about meal prep. As far as like getting people in a position to follow through with healthy eating, it's always like those accidents or those circumstances. Like, you know, I was traveling around a little bit in the last couple months and suddenly like a pizza would appear and I ate a pizza. I ate pizza for the first time in years at an event where I was with some friends in New York. A pizza appeared. I was told that the pizza was delicious. The next thing I know, I was eating pizza. I hadn't eaten pizza. I remember the last time I ate pizza was 2017, which was also one of these circumstances where pizza unexpectedly appeared at a time of great hunger. And there I was eating it. So I think that I'm pretty good. I think I've really like figured out foods that I like that are within the macro limitations and requirements that I want for my diet. And I have that pretty well programmed. But if people are new to that, the meal prepping and having the next meal ready seems like it would be pretty key for maintaining a new habit, but maybe that doesn't matter as much with where people have had so many lifestyle changes. Like people aren't going to work anymore. There's certainly less hustle and bustle. So, I mean, are you still recommending that? Is that like a key habit to install at the beginning of a, you know, like a process of being more healthy?
Definitely. Meal prepping is huge, and more so just, you know, getting people to prepare their foods. I get people all the time and they say, well, I eat healthy. And, you know, meanwhile, they're like 40, 50 pounds overweight. So I'm like, well, something's going on. And they'll explain to me how they eat. And it's like, yeah, they eat a lot of healthy things, but not necessarily paired together the right way. And they're not getting the macronutrients that they need. So that's a big component. And I've, over the years, I've really changed how I approach this. When I was in gyms and I was working with people, I tried to get people to prepare 5 to 6 meals a day from the get-go, because you want to get people to feel the difference when they're getting the right nutrients. And that takes being consistent for more than just 2-3 days. And people really struggled with that. So I've started kind of shifting the way that I approach it and really focusing on that one meal a day that they prepare in the beginning and giving them exactly what to eat for the other meals, and then focusing on meal prepping that one meal. And just that's all they have to do, one meal a day. Then once they master that, then bring in the second meal. Once they master that, then the third meal, so that it's not all of a sudden they are preparing everything, choosing everything at the grocery store, storing everything. So it's, they're gradually learning the habits. Then it's not just the actual preparation of the meal, but the grocery shopping for it, the storing of it, the cleanup of it. So it's a much more gradual process, but because of what they're controlled the rest of the day, they're getting the nutrients that they need. So after a week, they're starting to feel significantly better. And then that increases their motivation to continue to do it.
What are some of the most consistent blind spots that you run into with people around nutrition? Where, like, you piqued my curiosity when you said people are overweight and they tell you they're eating healthy. Like, what's a consistent mistake that you see people making?
Definitely portion sizes. And it's not always that they're too big. It's that sometimes, especially when it comes to protein, that it's actually too little. And because they're not getting enough of the protein, then they're having these like cravings and things that they can't control. And then they end up eating things that they shouldn't be eating too.
Like a loaf of bread.
Yeah. You know, and then like they could say, well, it was like whole wheat bread. Well, okay. Yeah. But it didn't fit into your macronutrients for the day. So now you're at an excess, which then gets stored as fat.
So do you go hard against the standard American diet? Do you confront people with that? Or is that something you have to kind of work your way into gradually because it's just going to blow people's minds?
I definitely am a big advocate of eating smaller meals more frequently throughout the day, and mm-hmm. really getting people to eat low glycemic foods to stabilize their insulin and sugar levels, because those are the things that cause us to feel hungry and crave things that we should, you know, the carbs, the ultra processed ones, or like sugars and breads that give us that quick energy. So I work a lot with getting people to know what low glycemic foods are, how to incorporate them into their into the way that they eat, and get them eating more frequently. So most people are only eating really eating twice a day and then kind of snacking throughout, but and just learning what those portions are.
Absolutely. Well, before we wrap up, first of all, I just want to say thank you for going down all of these tangents with me. You can tell this is definitely a subject that I like to discuss. I think as far as the bigger picture is concerned, I have a feeling, and I'm not trying to be grim, that 2021 is going to be a year where feeling the best we can inside our own skin is definitely going to be an important thing, right? It's definitely a place where we want to put maybe more attention than we have in years past. And I really appreciate what you said about, you know, these six areas or these six pillars of, you know, maximizing a healthy lifestyle. A lot of our focus here was on habit and goals. Are there any burning desires as far as like other information you'd want to offer people about installing new habits or working towards meaningful goals in this realm of fitness before we wrap up?
Definitely. I mean, I guess, you know, you kind of just said the meaningful goals. And that is the one thing I think when you are creating these goals for yourself, they need to be meaningful to you, and making sure that this is something that you value and you want to pursue. Creating meaning behind the goal for yourself is very important.
Excellent. So if people are interested in working with you or learning more about what you do, what's a good way to find you?
The best way to find me is to just look for Jackie Dalsimer on Facebook and friend request me, and we can, you know, you can message me through that platform.
Well, thank you so much for all of the information you provided, and thank you for meeting my need to have more discussions about this stuff. I thought this was, you know, it's great that the timing worked out. We could do this right at the beginning of a new year in the cliched way of this is the timing of the year where people think about these things at least until February, but I think the people listening to this already have this as a priority and are, you know, happy to hear tips or suggestions from new voices whenever we can make time for them. So thank you for making time for us.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much for having me today.
We'll talk soon.
All right. Sounds good. Safe travels.
You too. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.